Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports the Adam Carolla Show. So when you're choosing a mortgage lender, work with someone you can trust. Rocket Mortgage. They are transparent and they have an online process that gives you confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. Securely share your financial info for a mortgage and get approval in just minutes. It's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to be sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, skip the bank, skip the waiting, do it completely online at quickenloans.com/Adam. That's quickenloans.com/Adam. Dawson.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Neil deGrasse Tyson, with Gina Grad on news and Walt Bryan on sound effects. And now, the new director of the FBI, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Okay, we're going to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you, and thanks to Gina Grad for being a trooper and showing up, although we'll see how she does. How you doing, Gina Grad?
Pretty good, thanks.
All right, you're out.
No!
Bald Brian?
I want to say thank you for bringing your disgusting infection to a place that has people with compromised immune systems.
Thank God we're both free swinging bachelors.
Yeah.
Can I please say the only reason why, I love you people. But the only reason I'm here is because the doctor said I was not contagious. I just sound fucking horrible.
Stay away from cancer patients and you'll be good.
But see, for me, it's lose-lose because I don't get sick. Mm-hmm. All I get is the voice. All right. So God bless you. I love the work ethic. And I am telling you, if you need to, you'd like to, you're under no obligation here. You're allowed to get sick. I look at you as weak, but I don't look down upon you. No, I'm honestly, I would rather you go home and lay down, honestly, than be sick in here. I don't have any anything. You're sick. You should go home and lay down.
Am I getting raid? You're sending me out in the middle of the show.
It's a DTG, DTG show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't tolerate.
No, I mean, it's up to you. But I think you should go home and lay down. That's my take. I mean, how do you feel?
I don't feel very well.
Okay, go home and lay down. Okay, you're a trooper.
I'm very sorry.
This
is
going.
Sorry. All right.
No, this is going in
thank God she's gone. She's still here.
This is going in the books as a W. Do not worry. Take care of yourself. Feel better. And if you
cuddle
need me,
that little dog.
Oh, my baby.
Need me to come by later on with a 55-gallon tub of Vicks Vapor Rub. I shall.
Joel Coy has some.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
I'll send you pictures of Tessa.
Gina Grad. All right. I got stuff to talk about. Neil deGrasse Tyson is coming in. We love him, so that's good. Last time he was here, I don't know why. It's weird wiring human beings. He's a galactic superstar, but I could only fixate on him drinking a shake from Sonic and eating a Sonic burger.
Right.
I just sat there watching him do it going like, what were you doing? Like, I don't know. I guess it'd be like walking into the bathroom after Charlize Theron took a dump and just blew the place up and you just walk in and it'd be like, yeah, she's a female. She's has bowels,
internal organs, and
they move.
Digestive system.
And by the way, this is not her first dump. She probably does it once or twice a day. I would still stand with my jaw on the ground, just in disbelief. Yeah. Like, I can't believe she destroyed this bathroom. I don't know why. I know Neil's allowed to eat a hamburger. As a matter of fact, he looks like he's had a couple of hamburgers in his day, but somehow just him going through the Hardee's or Wendy's drive-thru didn't make sense to me.
It's incongruous for a super smart person to be doing what we all consider to be a dumb thing, going to fast food. It's like, no, he's eating. He's allowed to eat.
I know, and it's weird that I didn't even do was the habit and a milkshake. Oh. Yeah, a milkshake and a burger. Things. He had a burger earlier, whatever. But it whatever it was, I didn't even break it down. I just decided, much like I wouldn't break down Charlize Theron blowing up the bathroom. I just decided it didn't work for me.
Didn't add up.
Didn't add up for me. All
right. We'll question Neil about that when he gets here. We'll press him on the issues.
All right. So he's coming in, and we'll talk to him about that. Speaking of food and smart people. Oh, okay, good. Glad you brought it up, or at least a good segue.
You're welcome.
I had this thing that I told you about yesterday, which is the no cream in the house. Mm-hmm. So, and then the milk that went a little bit skunky this morning. So
the non-fat milk.
Or low fat or whatever it was, but the super not what I'm into. And so I put a scoop of butter into my coffee, which Vinny says
does that Vinny approved
all the time. Okay. Oh, would never even. As a matter of fact, one of the first things out of Vinny's mouth is, when I said, to all nutritionists, what do you do? And, they talk and talk and talk. But at a certain point, I go, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Give it to us. I've talked to 1,500 guys, it's always the same story, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. It's never, I always wish it was something interesting or good or different.
Give me some secret that no one knows.
Or give me a habit double cheese in there somewhere. It's just always, it starts off with a couple of poached eggs, mm-hmm. and then it goes into a salad for lunch, and then at dinner, it's a lean cut of whatever with some broccoli, and it's like, it's always, of course it is, mm-hmm. of course it is. It's never, a funnel cake mm-hmm. and a wheel of cheese, it's just, but... He said, I'll do morning. I'll do coffee. Just a scoop of real, real good butter in there. Mm. And I said, huh? And he said, yeah, just put a scoop of butter in there. It gets the oil in there, whatever. It's good. And that's all I need. I'll leave the house. So I took it. But as I was scooping butter into my coffee this morning, I was hearing like Jeff Ross going, Ralphie May's so fat, he puts butter in his coffee. Like, and it is, it's also what it,
yeah, it is.
It's what I started putting butter in the coffee. It sounded like you're so fat joke to me.
Because that's what we've been told and trained for our whole lives.
Look, here's the bottom line. A few years ago, anybody slathering butter in their coffee would have been a heretic.
A punchline on an Adam Sandler
movie.
A Chris Farley movie.
A few short years ago, it was, hey man, have a bran muffin. Mm. Have a nice bran muffin for breakfast. That's good.
You got
bran.
Fiber.
Fiber. Yeah, good. Bran, Oh no, filled with sugar and filled with carbs and filled with everything that's bad for you, the idea. So I get to, I'm unsatisfied because I don't have my cream. And I go to the other shop where the boys are, and I go, I think sometimes we get some half and half. We have some here. Sometimes we get a little half and half going in there. And I open the fridge, and I pulled out three offerings as to potential things that could go into my coffee.
Oh, boy.
We're
looking at a picture of them.
They were, first off.
What is it on the right?
Horchata. Cinnamon creamer horchata
flavor.
Oh,
my. Oh wow!
This is my warehouse. These are the people I employ. All right, what do you see?
I see a murderer's row of chemically sweetener. I see Nestle Coffee Mate, the original, a giant one, a novelty size.
Well, it has to be novelty, otherwise they would have to break every day to go get more at the store. They go back and forth, and they consume volumes of that stuff.
That's probably 32 ounces. The middle one is another Coffee Mate, another variety.
Hazelnut.
I was going to say caramel, hazelnut or something. And then a big thing of horchata on the right. Flavored creamer.
Right. Those are the three offerings that Adam Carolla has in his refrigerator, in his warehouse to put in his coffee. Yeah. And at a certain point, I hated to do it, but I just said, hey, Rob, come here. I said, I'm not saying this stuff makes you stupid.
But
I don't know a smart person that uses it. I've never seen a smart person use it. Only dumb people use this.
Neil deGrasse Tyson's out there pouring some hazelnut creamer.
Just walk by.
Onto his burger.
You take your chances. You figure out whether it makes you dumb or only dumb people use it. But if I were you, I wouldn't. I broke Lynette of this habit. If you can break Lynette of something, you can break anybody of this. Yeah. And
it's a real chicken or the egg.
I don't know. All I know is dumbasses use this stuff because the first ingredient is water. in terms of what you put in your coffee. And by the way, the number one ingredient on anything means that's the lion's share of it. Number one is water. Number two is corn syrup. And then it just gets the dextromethorphan number 15 and red binders, dye number 98 and all that stuff. But this is what you choose to do. Okay. Again, I'm simply warning you, only dumb people. It's right up there with Mountain Dew. Only dumb people ingest it. Now, does Mountain Dew make you dumb? Well, nectar of the tards, maybe it does. Or does a coffee mate make you dumb? I don't know. I wouldn't be taking my chances if I was a person who was trying to get a couple steps ahead in life.
Yeah, if it's 100% either way, you're not going to, you know, mess with it.
I don't know why the horchata was the kicker.
The horchata? I've only heard tales of horchata.
We got the regular coffee mate. We got the hazelnut coffee mate. We got the horchata. And after that was a half spent bottle of Mangria, which I took a big draw off of just to take the edge off. Just to take the edge off.
You should put in your coffee.
This isn't. By the way, I would be pissed if I went to Leno shop and opened the fridge and this was in it.
Can you imagine a restaurant only offering these?
This is my shop. Okay. All right.
Feel better.
Better, but I'm going to get pissed again in a second, so hold on. Sorry. First, Lewis Black, The Rant is Due. Oh, Audible is doing this. Everybody's getting into the content business these days. Lewis Black, The Rant is back. New original comedy series from the Audible channels. Everyone's getting into it these days. I love that. Hear the latest episodes free right now at audible.com/Lewis Black. This guy's funny. He likes to rant. You throw out a topic.
He's taking rent requests.
It's kind of what can Adam complain about, but I think the difference is I get clouds and Kimmel and puppies, and this is...
They're teeing them up with, you know...
Meter maids and taxes.
Okay. Congress and
stuff like that. Yeah, right. So it's written by the fans. They rant about everything, politics, relationships, anything you want. They're teed up, and you submit your rant, and Lewis goes to town. So you don't want to miss this. You know Lewis, by the way. Daily Show, voice of anger on Inside Out. Over millions of social media fans. Super funny guy. Listen to The Rant is Due free at audible.com/Lewis Black. All right, Neil deGrasse Tyson is here. So hold on. Don't go anywhere, Gary. I want to rant about one thing quick, and then we'll bring him in.
He's got to finish his burger.
I was, speaking of geniuses, I was sitting around watching TMZ last night, and...
That's a perfect segue.
Well, I hate when people do things and then rationalize them, but I will say... I can say two things. A, I watch it when I skip my rope. It's a very easy show to watch because it's basically like watching an aquarium filled with retarded fish. Mm-hmm. It's hard to watch 60 minutes when you're skipping rope or other shows I watch because this Audible is bad because with the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
You need something easy like digestible.
It's a little candy. Also, I get up, I'm up to snuff on what all the rappers are doing, all the rap wars are going on and what Justin Bieber's up to and so on and so forth.
You can have these conversations with your children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here on the air. Anyway, crazy question up on the board. I'll talk to tell you that. Well, maybe it'll be a nice segue to what I'm doing. So I'm watching TMZ last night, and what I really do is I sit around and I just sort of study trends. Like, where are we going? What's going on? And, you know, we've gone from the Ten Commandments being put in front of the courthouse to billboards that say human trafficking is a crime and elderly abuse and stop the elderly abuse, human trafficking, these crazy, like, don't throw your kid in a dumpster, bring him to the fire department. And I just look at it, I see the barbed wire around the freeway signs, and I go, I don't think we're going the right direction.
If this problem warrants a sign, let alone a campaign, you know what I mean? This is not heading the right direction.
Yeah, and one of the things I've really been drilling down on is lately is our lack of respect for authority, and it has jumped tenfold in the last year. Like, just cops, just pushing cops, punching cops. Like, it's just
our society handing them Pepsis when they're trying to squash
our rally. Society will come undone if we don't have respect for authority. Now, look, it could be your dad, it could be the school principal, could be your school teacher, could be the crossing guard. Like, whatever it is, we need that
person you're supposed to listen to.
We need it. Otherwise, it's kind of what defines a society.
And it instills discipline, too, at the basic level, the earliest level, it instills discipline just in every person.
Right. So I was watching TMZ last night, and the two stories that ran almost back-to-back, like within a period of about 80 seconds, the first was the L.A. commissioner, he's the police commissioner president. I still don't know what that means, but he's the L.A. police commissioner president, Matt Johnson. And he was just walking outside of a restaurant, and he was asked about the vandalism of Trump's star. It's constantly people are hitting it with a pickaxe. Are defecating on it.
On the Walk of Fame on Hollywood Boulevard, Donald Trump has a star on the Walk of Fame for, you know, TV and whatever, and people are vandalizing it, doing things to
constantly.
It. Yeah.
So we're asked the L.A. police commissioner president what he thinks about it.
Hey, Matt, how you doing? Hey, what do you think about the ongoing defacing of Donald Trump's star of fame?
I'm in favor of it.
You're in favor of it?
Okay, stop it there. So I'm sort of watching, everyone's laughing, but I'm like, hold on a second now, police commissioner guy. There's people taking a pickaxe down to Hollywood Boulevard. A guy just walking down Hollywood Boulevard with a pickaxe.
That in and of itself is potentially alarming.
A few years ago, someone was stabbed just standing there.
Not the safest area.
Well, Hollywood probably Boulevard. Shouldn't be wielding a pickaxe there. But anyway, he's the police commissioner. He's in favor of it. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it was anybody else if he'd be in favor of it. Yeah. I'm guessing no. But that's awesome. I was just kind of looking at him and going, listen, I would can this guy. Like, I literally would. I'd go, look, they're defacing property, and you're the commish, and you're like, I'm in favor of it. Like, he didn't go, like, he didn't give an answer where he was like, you shouldn't hurt anybody, but if you're going to hurt somebody, maybe that's not a bad choice, you know?
You talk about, like, the times they are a-changing. It's funny that years ago, it would have been a public official would have taken a very political answer, a very politically correct answer, like, well, you shouldn't deface public property, or, you know, I don't approve of this kind. If you want to demonstrate, please do it. The jokey answer to TMZ is
president
kind of the sign of the time.
This is the president of the United States. You don't have to agree with anything he says, but you're not allowed to take a pickaxe to his sidewalk. Anyway, let me hear it one more time, Gary, because it made me laugh. And then, so I was watching this.
Hey, what do you think about the ongoing defacing of Donald Trump's star of fame?
I'm in favor of it.
Okay. That was pretty definitive. I'm in favor of it. And also, what a climate we're living in, because everybody here is scared for their job. Mm-hmm. If you start straying into any LGBT community jokes or any racial anything.
If it had been Caitlyn Jenner, he'd be fired today.
You are 1,000%, record this, you are 1,000% correct. If it was Caitlyn Jenner,
a cleaner take on
obviously
that?
Barack Obama depending on the president.
Yeah.
But if it was Caitlyn Jenner's star and somebody was defacing it, which we live in a society where you go, all right, that kind of, I could buy that.
Could happen, yeah,
I could buy that. He would be gone this morning and the community would be outraged.
Yeah,
everybody would be outraged. And you know what they would say? They wouldn't limit it to Caitlyn Jenner. Mm-hmm. They would just say, everybody has the right to dignity. I don't care if you, and here's what they'd say. If you were watching The View this morning, those yentas would say, I don't care if you agree or disagree with Caitlyn Jenner or Caitlyn Jenner's politics or Caitlyn Jenner's decisions or choices. That I don't care. That has nothing to do with this. You do not deface property. But that's what they do. It's exactly what they would say. Exactly.
Yep.
Okay. So.
Well, this gets a laugh because
Well,
he snapped back pretty quick. He wasn't hesitating.
Right, but he's not afraid for his job.
No, of course.
And you're right. You're 1,000% right. If that was Caitlyn Jenner, he'd be gone this morning. Well, he'd issue a public apology
on his way out.
and then he'd be cut loose. Yes, exactly 100% correct. And it's called hypocrisy, everybody. Now, the next story I watch, so I start thinking, we have no respect for authority anymore, but authority doesn't have respect for authority.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's the LA police commissioner, and he's telling president, and he says, who cares?
Right.
I'm for it. And he doesn't say, who cares? He says, I'm for it. Like, as in, go ahead and do more.
Please.
And if I ever got prosecuted for taking a pickaxe to Trump's star. Mm-hmm. I just play this tape.
Yeah.
Looks like endorsed by your own guy. Like, yeah. Well, what do you mean? I didn't know. Was it be like standing next to a cop going, hey, can I jaywalk? Yeah, go ahead and jaywalk. And
well, he told me to.
If he wrote me a ticket, I'd bring that up in court.
Exhibit A.
All right. Let's see. The next story I saw, same night, just 30 seconds later. Go ahead.
Oh, my.
A huge fracas.
What appears to be an airport?
It's an airport. Okay. And it's cops. And it's chicks punching cops and chicks pushing cops. Oh. And, like, one chick is literally just throwing down with cops. There's nine cops, and there was this one chick with a backpack. And now look at her. There's an officer pushing at her, and she's pushing back at the cop, presumably trying to get at somebody she wants to throw a punch at. Okay.
That is a very crowded ticketing area at an airport, and there is a large fracas going on.
Right. Yeah. But here's the main part.
I'm trying to paint the picture.
Thank you. The melee, the Donnybrook. When the Donnybrook breaks out, that's fine. That happens all the time. It's been happening through history. And then the cops show up, and it stops.
Usually you would scatter. Like, oh, get away, the cops are here!
One cop shows up, the melee breaks up. This is 11 cops showing up, and female, 20-something or 30-something-year-old female, throwing down with the cop.
Time to escalate. We're going off the top rope.
That did not exist formally in this country, and it really didn't exist like this 4 years ago. Like, this is on the rise, and we're going to have to make a move here. Mm. This is basically, here's what's going on in our society. You got a 13-year-old boy, and you just walked in, and he was torturing a cat. Don't wait till he's 19 to call a therapist.
We'll see what happens.
Let's get moving now. Mm-hmm. Let's get moving now. We need to make a move.
This is your window.
Now. This is our window. Yes. And the thing that was comical is I watched the one story, and I was like, God, we have no authority anymore. And the very next story is just chicks punching cops at an airport. In groups of other cops, too. Like, no fear of being...
They did not seem intimidated or backing down a bit.
Is this
in the 5 seconds?
This is new, is it not?
I've never seen it.
Okay, so there's two questions to answer. Is it new? Yes. Is it good? No. Okay. Treat it like an abscess. You wake up one morning, you look down, and you see a big carbuncle on your ass cheek. Is it new? Yes.
Is it good?
No. Okay.
That's our new T-shirt, Gary.
Should we wait several years to get into the dermatologist, or should we make an appointment this afternoon?
Or address that ASAP.
All right. Neil deGrasse Tyson is here, so you don't want to make him wait. Oh, God. There's so many questions. I don't know. I feel like I just want to bring Neil in, but then we Gina's gone with the news. I'll tell you what. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to tell you about Tommy John. I'm wearing the Tommy John underpants right now. And we'll bring Neil in. Spring cleaning. Start with the underwear drawer. It is the best. It's Tommy John. Ooh. You won't go another direction. I will say this. You'll get the Tommy John underwear or the T-shirts or the socks, and you simply won't. You won't go another direction. Mm-hmm. You really won't.
You know what they're good for? I use mine for traveling. We travel because they roll up so thin.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're so light.
You stuff them inside of a shoe or something like that. They're not going to take up a lot of room in your bag.
For that exact reason, I have a set in my backpack. See? Socks and underwear, there just in case there's ever a problem.
They're good for traveling.
Nice, yeah. Porcelain Punisher. You should keep a baker's dozen of those in your backpack.
Just stuff them everywhere, behind
the
seat.
Just for the walk out to the car every day. I got a complete line of evolved undershirts. They stay tucked in. They're literally an undershirt, not a full shirt. You wear an undershirt. It's great. Socks, too. It's the best. It's Tommy John, and it's backed by the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee. It's Tommy John Dawson.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com now and save 20% on your first order with promo code Adam. That's promo code Adam for 20% off only at TommyJohn.com. TommyJohn.com.
Gary, do we need to take a break, or can we bring Neil in?
Give me about 30 seconds, and I'll give you an answer.
Okay. Let me just mow through a call here before I bring Neil in. Hey, Ryan. Oh, actually, screw that. Yeah. Let's talk to Brandon, 31, Washington.
Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Yeah. Oh, you want to talk about millennial employees. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Okay. I'm a contractor. I'm an electrical contractor. All right. I'll try and be fast with
Wait,
this.
Brandon, you're 31. Aren't you a millennial?
I'm not a millennial.
I'm going to check the dates on that. I'm going to check the dates.
Am I?
I don't know.
Tell your story, Brandon.
All right. So I got a kid working for me. He's pretty sharp. but he's very slow, and he's 20. So basically, most of the time, our job is, you know, Adam, an electrician's job, would involve some thinking, making sure you're not burning people's houses down. But every now and then, we got to dig a trench. That means grab the shovel, dig a hole.
Yeah.
I even had an excavator come and dig the trench for this kid. And we lay the conduit in the ground. I tell him, all right, grab that shovel, backfill. Pile's about 6 feet high. I figure it should take him about 2 hours. Took him all day long. And by the end of the day, I'm getting very frustrated trying to explain to him. He's overthinking it. He's looking at the pile. He's trying to scrape it from the bottom up. Instead of just shoving the shovel into the pile and moving the dirt, he had to overthink it. He had to try and surmise which area needed more and less fill. And so basically told me by the end that doing it his way wasn't necessarily a deal breaker. But to me, his boss, that we were going to do it his way.
Well, well, we're just talking about the breakdown of authority. Yeah, you know, famously had an assistant say he needed to talk to me about my tone.
That was the story that made me think of this and call you.
That, yeah. Look, I've said it, thank you, Brandon. I've said it a million times. It's never, the disconnect for me is never the part where you want to get out of work to do something. That's as old as work, when they were building pyramids. Guys were calling in sick.
I can't slave today.
Jews,
maybe tomorrow.
Were calling in sick. Hebrews were calling in sick. No, that's as old as jobs. That, you know, whatever. I did it when I was a construction guy.
Human nature.
It's human nature. It's fine. As I said, the difference between then and now is I would call up and say, my Aunt Gertie died, and I have to go to the funeral on Friday. I won't be coming in, and or
leave a voicemail like, I can't come in today.
Yeah, like Gina did to us, or even do in person like she did again today. She's on her way to Malibu right now to go wakeboarding. But either way, that's what I would do. Now, it's Bonnaroo has extended to a third day, and so I won't be coming in on Monday.
You understand.
That's the difference.
I can't be expected to come in.
And people have no idea the significance of that because they go, well, the person's just telling the truth. What's the difference? Oh, no. That is significant in terms of the boss man who is the authority versus you, who is the student, the child, the underling, the employee, whatever it is. It sounds like nothing, but it's symbolically huge, and it's a turning point, and we're not going to be better because of it.
Let me ask you this about Brandon's situation. Do you, much like your example of the coffee creamer, you know, stupid people drink it, or it makes people stupid. Is this just a 20-year-old being a dumb 20-year-old, and you know, the work ethic isn't quite there, or is this a generational thing?
It's
to throw it on millennials, but you know what I'm saying. Is this just some dumb 20-year-old doing dumb 20-year-old things?
I was a dumb 20-year-old, but I was super. I was a dumb 20-year-old, and I worked digging ditches. And, you know, I would head out to Mike Stramat's F-150 to go get his level, and he would yell, run. Mm-hmm. And I would, with my tool bags on, would go running. I remember it was up a driveway working on a hill.
Jingle, jangle.
I've been running, stuff falling out of my tool belt. Took longer for me to get the level because I had to gather up the stuff. But I started jogging in my boots to get his car to his truck, which was 40 feet away. Now, I know he's just having fun because that's what bosses used to get to do. Not so much anymore. But no, you grow up in a snow globe of a constant, every piece of crap finger painting you do goes on the fridge. Mm-hmm. Everyone tells you you're unique. Wawa Wubsy says you are the coolest over and over again. And of course, when you're 22, you're a monster. Why should you listen to anyone? You've never had any experience. Look, Kim Jong, all these guys, right? We go, what's up with this guy? What's up with this guy? What's up? What's he's crazy?
He's crazy maniac.
Well, of course. He's
out of touch with reality.
Yes.
It's literally.
You understand it with him. All right. You understand it with him, right?
Yeah,
okay. So, okay. You get it. He was carried by servants to take a dump every morning and then carried, then somebody wiped his ass.
Every child actor and.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We get it. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, it's like this. That is pure strychnine. All right. And that'll just kill you if you even sniff it. Mm-hmm. Fine. Now, what our guys have here in this is a glass of table water with three or four drops of that in it.
A little saline in it, yeah.
It's a cut down, stepped on version of Kim Jong-un or whatever his name is. It's a lesser version of that. That's it.
Okay.
So how do they act? A lesser version of him. It's simple. Super simple. I know everything. All right. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Speaking of guys who know everything.
Yeah. In studio right after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Mack Reynolds, two-time Daytona 500 winning crew chief and host of the podcast Larry Mack, America's Crew Chief on Podcast One. On my next episode, I look back at 500 laps from Bristol Motor Speedway in the Monster Energy Cup Series, and then I'll look ahead to another short track race at Richmond, Virginia. But also, I break down a major announcement our most popular driver, Dale Earnhardt Jr., made just this week, one that rocked the NASCAR world. Remember, every Thursday you can download a new episode of Larry Mack, America's Crew Chief, at PodcastOne.com or by subscribing to iTunes.
The Corolla Drinks, Comedy and Music Tour, live music, stand-up comedy, and buttloads of Mangria. June 17th in Long Beach at D Piazza's. June 22nd in Fresno at Sequoia Brewing Company. And June 24th in Seattle, Washington at Showbox Soda Lounge. With special guest comedians and bands in every city featuring Loxy. Baby, let's roll. Plus, comedy from Matt Edgar. Tickets and more information are available online at CorollaDrinks.com. The Corolla Drinks Comedy and Music Tour. In Seattle with Lynette Corolla and Ray Oldhopper. In Long Beach with Mike Dawson and the Smokin' Kills.
Standing in the backyard, looking for a tree to climb.
June 17th in Long Beach. June 22nd in Fresno. June 24th in Seattle. The Corolla Drinks Comedy and Music Tour with Loxy and Matt Edgar. Get your tickets now at CorollaDrinks.com. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, hey, missed opportunity here. You should get Sonny back in the studio for an epic fail ringtone, because I think that's money in the bank right there. And I know Natalia is going to give you grief, seeing how that'll be two ringtones for Sonny and none for her, so you might want to keep that under wraps, because otherwise might have a backlash. But yeah, man, epic fail. Get a ringtone. Bye.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, make a note, Gary. We'll do that. Neil deGrasse Tyson in studio. Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, available right now on Amazon. And you know what to do. Bookmark us and go through our site. Spread the love around. Good to see you, Neil.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Everyone loves Neil deGrasse Tyson.
No, they love the universe, and I'm in the way of that. And I'm just a conduit for their cosmic curiosity. That's how I think about it.
No, they love you. They love you. They really do. Everybody. In a nation divided, we all can agree on Neil deGrasse Tyson.
But I don't... Okay, but that's not what I'm after. I'm just after sort of some kind of science literacy and cosmic enlightenment.
You know,
and then when we hit that level, then I go home. I'll go to the Bahamas and I'll leave it behind.
You know what's sad about what Adam said? We can all agree and all this stuff. You must get a ton of blowback on Twitter just about God knows what.
Well, except that my tweets are rarely, I mean, one in a thousand of them will be a full out opinion. Mm-hmm. The rest are not opinions, even if they feel as though they are. They're actually simple statements of fact. And as an astrophysicist, one of the great things we do and think about is collectively it's just called a cosmic perspective. And so, in fact, the 12th and final chapter of the book is Reflections on a Cosmic Perspective. It's we see the world differently because we study the world as this moat in orbit around an insignificant star living in an undistinguished galaxy. And when you come to Earth with that point of view, everything looks different to you. And all these petty squabbles over lines in the sand that you've just drawn, over property or belief systems or resources, all look petty. Mm-hmm. And I recognize there are real issues and they need real solutions. But if you come to it recognizing that the one great thing the cosmic perspective does is dismantle your ego and then builds it back up, but in a different way. One where you're special not because you're different from everyone else. You're special because you're the same. And I know that sounds all sort of new agey, but yeah. But these are fundamentally accurate things. I'll just give a quick example. So in 1 centimeter of your lower colon lives and works as many microbes as there are human beings who have ever been born.
Wow.
And that we think
ever been born.
We think we're in charge. We're humans and we run the earth. Yet you, to those microbes, are simply a dark anaerobic vessel of fecal matter. That's all you are
to
them. My
wife looks at me that way, more accurately, but yeah.
Wait
a minute. Stuffed in an ATM.
That's her favorite insult. Dark anaerobic fecal matter.
Stuffed in an ATM. That's all you are to me.
Vessel of fecal matter. And so
she looks at me.
And then you consider that if they are unhappy with you, then they're in charge of you. Sending you to the bathroom every 12 minutes. And then you have to realize, no, you're not better than the microbes. In fact, you are sharing the same vessel. And you need each other to survive.
Well,
that's a biological cosmic perspective, if you will.
I had, on a sort of much less enlightened scale, a conversation about 20 minutes ago as a sort of atheist who is sitting on the same orb as you and constantly confused in what human beings do and how much time they spend on it and how much energy they put into it. Look, I don't even understand tattoos. I understand it for dudes trying to get laid, but outside of that, I can't make sense of people spending money and spending time and risking infection. I don't even get that. Mm-hmm. Then there's a million things. I don't get piercings. I don't get almost everything we do. I had this conversation and I hope this comes. I hope there's some meat on the bone here for you, Neil. But okay, I had this conversation.
Can I quickly tell you why I don't have tattoos?
Yes.
Just since you walked by that before you got it.
Go ahead.
So apart from it not having been a thing in my day,
right?
Two kinds of people had tattoos: bikers and sailors, right?
Yeah, merchant marines.
Yeah. So that was the only sort of category tattoo categories. But apart from that, as probably having a strong influence on me, since I'm thinking of myself as a lifelong learner. There is nothing I am so sure about that I want to indelibly etch onto my skin, which would then prevent me from having new ideas in the future that might transcend anything that I thought was deep at the time I got a tattoo.
Well, how about the ones that just say breathe?
Yeah. Chinese symbol for strength.
I feel like I do that when I'm drunk and passed out, so I certainly don't need a visual reminder for it.
Maybe there's another word later that will be deeper than brave that we come up with, or another
breathe,
concept.
Sorry.
And so that's why. I'm tattoo free. But go on, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I had this conversation. I'm doing a big tile job at my house. I got my flooring guy, Rob, doing the tile job.
You can't stop making stuff.
I cannot stop. It's my universe, pardon the pun. And I said, I got Roberto and Alvaro. They've been working with me for 15 years, and I'm good to them. They're good to me. We get along, and they mostly do a lot of paint and drywall, and they've done it all around here and everything. And I said, where the hell is Alvaro? Where's he been? We've been trying to get him over and whatever. I find out this morning he's insulted. Mm. What's going on? He thinks he should have been doing the tile job. He's
put taking
off.
It personally?
He's upset at you. He's insulted that you didn't ask him, and so on and so forth. And I'm like, I didn't even think about it. Rob's the floor guy. He does the flooring. He ordered the tiles. I'm not saying those guys can't do it. And then I thought, the dude is 50 years old. Like, how much time do you want to devote to nothing? I had no thoughts about disrespect toward him. And I've seen it a lot on the job site, a lot, and it doesn't serve you at all. It does not help you. It doesn't make you money. It doesn't make you happy. It doesn't make you anything. All you're doing is losing out on $20 an hour over at my house, and it's completely nothing, yet you're going to take this to the grave. And there's so many of those qualities we have as humans and as cultures and as nations, and it just never ends. It never works. It never serves anybody. We don't care.
And like you mentioned on the job site, it's not like he didn't get invited to a bachelor party. Like, he didn't. We've been lifelong friends, and this is how you treat our friends. It's a job.
Now, if I can just toss something into that observation. So this is why some managers are better than others. Because
coming back to me.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, everyone.
No, the greatest of the managers have a sensitivity to the variations in the personality of who they manage. And you can be blunt and say, get over it, or just, you know, grow a gonad, or, you know, you could do that, but then that creates some kind of other things going on in the atmosphere of the workplace.
So, I agree with you. This guy Alvaro has been, we've been nothing but friendly. He's never displayed an ounce of attitude.
That's not what he said.
He's never done, he's never done a tile or flooring job for me either. That's the confusing.
It's because you've never asked.
Part. All right. Well, maybe this one's on me. Look, I agree with Neil. I should internalize. Let me go find a mirror and cry into it. So for you, so this is very interesting. So you, in a way, it's a burden because you have to wander around this planet and you have to see what people are doing to the planet and doing to each other.
And to other life on Earth.
And to other life on Earth. And you just go, please, can we please just stop it, people? Or can we just do what makes sense that'll benefit you and benefit everyone else? And yet we can't.
Well, so what I found is it doesn't work telling people to stop doing something because they have, they're embedded in it. They're invested in it, either culturally, politically, religiously. And so as an educator, what I try to do is enlighten people at some earlier stage of how to look at and think about this world and how it all fits together. And when you do that and they learn it, sort of, they can take ownership of that awareness and that enlightenment, then I'm not even in the equation at that point.
Right.
Because you go to that person, well, how does this work? Well, here's why. It does this, that, that, or the other. If instead they say, oh, it works this way because Tyson told me, then I failed as an educator. So my goal is to infuse some sense of curiosity in people who, as adults, had it, we had it beaten out of us early on. You know, as a kid, what happens? Your parents spend the first couple of years teaching you to walk and talk, and the rest of your life telling you to shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
That is the end of curiosity.
Hold on. It's the only thing I know in Spanish. ¡Cállate! ¡Siéntate! I was bilingually told to shut up and sit down by both cultures here in Los Angeles.
¡Cállate! ¡Siéntate! Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So, for example, yeah, there's like phrasing for just this purpose.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So once that's squashed, then knowledge is measured not by your ability to figure something out, but by how much you just remember that's been handed to you.
Right.
And that doesn't involve any processing of information at all. And so you come out as an adult with the belief that you are educated, either with your high school diploma or with college, when all you were in your years in school was this vessel that where they zipped open your head, poured knowledge in, zipped it back up, and you think that you're educated. But there's a missing – and at some level, yes, you are, but you're missing a fundamental part of what it is to – participate in this moving frontier of the 21st century. And it's when someone hands you information, do you know how to be skeptical? When you should be skeptical? How do you process that information? Compare it to other information. The internet came on us so fast that we have at our fingertips access to all information of the world. And now nobody knows how to tell what's true and what's not. And somewhere in the educational pipeline, there needs to be how to tell what's true.
Well, I've been screaming about this for the last several years, which is we've replaced, I think, with I feel. I know, like I know in my heart what I did and what I don't do, and you can't tell me what I feel. I've had these arguments. I had an argument with my daughter where she's 10. This is probably a year and a half ago, where I was explaining to her this didn't happen the way she said it happened, and she said, well, I feel this way.
Yeah,
and because I feel this way, it is. Meaning you can't argue with feelings. That's the way you feel. You feel insulted. You feel hurt. You feel attacked, put upon. You feel attacked. And I was saying to her, oh, yes, I can. I said, I don't want you going through life with this sort of trump card of feelings which gets you out of all reality.
Right. Because, in fact, if you don't know that there's a boundary beyond which feelings have no place, right? Oh, I feel like there is no global warming. There's a point where you cannot invoke your feeling. Or you could in a free country. You should be able to think and feel and say what you want. But then you should not be put in the position of power over others where your absence of knowledge can actually have a devastating consequence on other people.
Do you think, as it pertains to this global warming business, and I spoke to Al Gore on my radio show several years ago, and I just said this. I'm not a big tree hugger. Mm-hmm. I am a guy who hates waste. I hate waste of any kind. It bothers me on a cosmic level.
Plus, you can't be a tree hugger when you're putting up 2x4s.
That's right. You killed my dad and uncle. How dare you? Remove your arms from my trunk.
If you're a 2x4 guy, you're not a tree hugger.
I'm basically the Hitler of the San Fernando Valley. Round up all the trees.
Round them up and slice them up. All right.
They have names for you, like the Butcher of the Valley. Here he comes.
But I hate waste.
Yeah.
And so I don't really approach the whole thing from a, I love the planet. And I don't even approach it from, I love money. It's just, if there's a porch light and it's going to be left on, it's going to be an LED bulb and it's going to be put on a timer and it's not going to be on while the sun comes out at 6 a.m. I'm not getting up at 6 a.m. and turning it off. The timer's turning it off. And
I recently tweeted, I said, if you're in an airplane flying over a city and you can see a street light, then someone is paying to have that street light illuminate the side of your airplane.
Right.
So all it takes is some kind of a shielding hat on all the street lamps. So all the light points down instead of having half your light point up. And if it points down, then you need half the wattage.
Right.
And everybody benefits. And plus, I get a dark sky where I can look at the Milky Way at night.
If you turn around 180 degrees, you'll see a thermostat, and next to thermostat is a switch with a red light under it. And the thermostat,
I will confirm this observation. Yes.
Thank you. The thermostat cannot operate unless the switch with the red light is on, because I did not want to come here on a Sunday when nobody was here and find out that the air was blowing in here, because the air turns on and off and people forget about it.
Right.
And so that's all I do. Now,
so you're an efficient guy.
I'm down with Al Gore. I'm just not down with him and Leo in the tree hug. I'm down in a even maybe a more fundamental way, which is I don't want to waste anything. There's a solar panel. Let's put it up. Right. Maybe if we couch the argument in terms of dollars and cents and waste and a little less argument over what's going on with the Great Barrier Reef, maybe more headway could be made.
So my sort of toe-stepping in that world, as you just described, because professionally I'm an astrophysicist, I'm not a climate scientist, but I know how to read scientific literature. And so the way I think about that problem is, if you go back, was it the early 1800s, mid 1800s, when whaling was a huge industry, okay?
Right.
There might have been people who said, don't kill the whales, but you never heard them because whales were so freaking valuable.
We needed the oil every lamp.
We needed the oil. So you might have had a voice, but no one gave a rat's ass.
Right.
And then we find oil in the ground, and we figure out another way to obtain energy that doesn't involve killing whales.
Right.
You can then claim that you were successful in the Save the Whales movement, but that's not why you were successful.
All
because something cheaper, something easier became available immediately, and it was as useful, if not more, than anything you were pulling out of whale blubber. So
I agree.
So watch. So what I'm saying now is, so if you look at sort of the green movement, you can look at other countries where there's a burgeoning renewable energy movement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want economically to be a player in the 21st century, forget even having the environmental conversation. Just hold that aside. Just let's talk money. Because if you're a resident of the United States of America, there's a little bit or a lot of capitalism in you. You don't want to die, and you don't want to die poor. So what does that involve? Does it mean keeping the coal industry alive until every last bit of coal is pulled out of the mountains? Then you got nothing. When everybody else then has led the world with every possible green source of energy, the innovations that requires, and the industries that it births, and then we sit back and say, oh, guys, could you show us your patents so that we can compete too? So I'm just saying, economically.
I agree. That's all I've ever said, which is we're never going to stop killing whales because we like whales.
Right.
We're going to move on to something that works for us financially.
Realistically, that's kind of how people have always behaved. That's right.
It's ironic that the people who hate oil now that's coming from the ground had great grandparents that were picketing the whalers.
Say, why can't we get some out of the
probably
ground?
Happy that they were getting it out of the ground, but that's called progress. That's called technology, and exactly. I'm all for you. You can have all the rainbow warriors and Greenpeace and all you want. Nothing will ever stop it until the economic climate changes.
In a capitalist society, free society, it's very hard to move people against their economic interests.
And I agree with you. Yeah. Let's just go. I had this realization the first time I went to London and I walked outside of a pub, although I'm just calling it a pub. I think it was a strip bar, strip club. Strippers are really expensive over there. Anyway,
I think every building's a pub there.
So I walked outside.
Well, he doesn't know the difference between a bar and a strip club. So that's the problem.
I walked outside and there was these urinals that were shaped. There were sort of tri-urinals. It was like three at a time. And they reminded me of an inside cap on a car rim where the lugs go around it and the caps kind of scalloped out for the lug. It was three dudes turning their backs, no doors, no body, just this thing. And they'll turn their back to society and they took a whiz. And at some point at the end of the night, I'm guessing somebody emptied it. But I thought, that's three dudes. It's right on the sidewalk. Evidently, they had a problem with people staggering out of the strip joint or the pub or whatever and pissing in the alley. And they went, let's do something about it. Here, every stairwell and every commercial parking structure I've ever been in
smells like
piss.
Yes.
All right. So we have the same problem, yet we don't address it. Why? Oh, we're looking at them now. Yeah, it's not that big a whoop. You just kind of turn your back to society and you take a whiz versus whizzing on the side of the store on that faces the alley.
So where do the people
so
who
we
present
take their idea and we rip it off?
Where do the people who present themselves as women pee?
Oh, who cares? They're not interested in them. The strippers can pee wherever they want. Oh, you mean the other women?
Part of the show.
Yes, part of the show. Yeah. So, the lemonade room is where they. So, I love the thing where we go, hey, Japan and your bullet train, or hey, Netherlands and your windmills, or whatever it is. Please let us borrow that technology.
It's just nice if we would come up with it first. That's all.
Yeah. It'd be nice. Well, we have
another,
our own.
There's another factor where the full cost of oil is not really factored into what you're paying for it, because the government built the roads. The government, there's a lot that's behind that,
right,
that sort of artificially makes it look cheaper than the rest of sources of energy.
So where are we heading? What do you think?
We're sliding. We're slipping.
We're slipping.
Yeah,
we're not going
stage.
The right direction.
No, we're slipping.
What do you think would be the most feasible energy technology for us?
I don't think in terms of that. I think in terms of a general investment in our future and a general investment. So Trump should be able to figure this out as a businessman. You say, for any company that you're running, what percentage of your revenue goes to R&D?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because that assures the success of your company going forward. You could spend it all now, not on R&D, and then you look wealthy for the next couple of years, and then you drive off a cliff because you've got no seed corn. So innovations in science and technology, we have known since the Industrial Revolution and before, are the engines of tomorrow's growth economies. And it's not only economics, but it's also your health, and especially your security. Tomorrow's security is not how many soldiers are we deploying. No, it's how many cyber experts do you have? How many high-tech drones are you deploying? That's a whole other frontier. I recently was appointed by the Secretary of Defense to serve on a board of the Pentagon to think about the future of innovation of the Defense Department. And this is – so this comes from –
congratulations, by the way.
Innovations in science and technology. You're not getting that from anywhere else. And so if you're going to create a country where either people don't know what science is or stand in denial of what it is, or creating legislation in the absence of it that should be informed by it, that is the beginning of the end of the unraveling of our democracy, of our informed democracy.
Wow. Hey, Gary.
I don't mean to load that all on you.
Gina, stay home.
I love it.
Don't bother.
Tell me the name of the cat along with the credentials, the guy I interviewed for the for Take a Knee, my inspirational podcast. It was a engineer, mechanical engineer. And And I say this to every thinking person, engineer, man of science who comes in here, which is I'm basically an atheist. I look at myself as somebody who was sent back from the future to just be annoyed. That's all. If I was going to make a sci-fi movie, it'd just be I'm a traveler from a distant time who's sent back in time, and I'm just annoyed at everything. That's all I am. And I talk to these people. I talk to people like you, and I'll give you this engineer's name in a second. And this guy. So what this guy did is he said Dale Earnhardt hit a cement barrier and died.
Mm-hmm.
And he died because of the velocity and the angle and the fact that the cement barrier had no give
in
it.
100% there. That's correct.
Right. And his neck snapped. And Dr. Dean Sicking is his name. And he's at the University of, we'll figure it all out.
Alabama, Birmingham.
And his title is,
Vice President of Product Development. He's also a professor of mechanical engineering.
He's obsessed with guys on like freeways where they sector off and there's a big pylon there, mm-hmm. big cement pylon of putting things there that people don't hit and snap their neck instead of having the crush things with the sand and the water and whatever.
Right.
He invented a safe barrier. Because he examined the problem.
Mm-hmm.
He went, why did this guy die on this semi-innocuous crash? It wasn't bad. It wasn't fire. It wasn't cartwheeling.
You mean Dale Earnhardt?
Dale Earnhardt.
No, but what's important about that is in physics 101, you learn what kills you.
Right.
And what kills you is the value of the acceleration, be it either a high a positive acceleration or a negative acceleration, which we would call deceleration. So what intrigues me is that, of course, you can go on the internet, on YouTube, and there are whole compilations that are titled, And They Walked. Okay, you know this. It's from NASCAR or any of this.
Sure.
And so you see this. They're going 200 miles an hour, and one loses control, and the car spins and flips, and it gets scattered across a quarter mile of track, and the guy gets out and walks.
Yep.
And everyone says, oh, that's a miracle. No, it's not. It's physics.
Right.
Because it took him a quarter of a mile to slow down.
Right.
That's what matters. It's why high jumpers land in cushions and pillows and not in cement. Why pole vaulters land in pillows and not cement.
Right.
You want to delay the time it takes you to stop. And so when I saw that Dale Earnhardt crash, I said, he's dead. Instantly.
Oh, you did?
And people saying, oh, there's no fire. There's no crash.
The one black guy watching NASCAR.
No,
he's dead.
No,
in real time.
He is not surviving that.
Yeah, and he didn't.
He went from 200 miles, 180 miles an hour to zero in a fraction of a second.
And this guy.
That's what matters. And acceleration is change in velocity divided by time.
Dr. Dean Sicking said, so I just went and examined the crash, found out what killed him, and realized here's what killed him. And so we made this safe barrier, and no one has died in the last, 18 years or 20 years. And many have hit the wall.
Right.
Nobody else has died.
Exactly.
And
no matter how fiery the thing looks or how many pieces of the car scattered.
Yeah, well, certainly whatever. They didn't die doing what Dale Earnhardt did because this guy invented a wall that absorbed the impact.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Super simple for him. So I said, you can just take this. He's working on football helmets now. So it's a little more difficult. But he says, all you do is examine what killed the person or what killed this planet or what killed the society or whatever it is, or what you don't want to do or what you do want to happen. And then you just reverse engineer it. You solve it.
You fix it.
Why can't we just take societal problems and have guys like you and Dr. Dean over here and just go, you guys figure it out and whatever you come up with. That's what we'll go for instead of politicians talking about feelings.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, I hate to sound like to give this overplayed answer, but in kindergarten through 12, we're missing an aspect of education that would empower you to be curious about solving a problem rather than just cementing knowledge into your head.
Right.
This was the challenge we had when Pluto got demoted. All right, I hate to bring up Pluto, the poor thing, but Pluto gets demoted and people freak out. And, well, why are you freaking out? Because there are nine planets. There can't be eight because I learned there are nine.
Right.
And somehow this number got ossified in people's heads. And that was some foundational scientific
ossified,
truth.
Ossified. That's a Don King word right there. I don't know. Look that up, Gary. He may have just went Don King on us.
Even ossified?
I love me some ossified. Even if you don't know what the word means, it just feels like you know what it means.
We're not so sure it exists, Don.
Don't you ossify us. We know what it means. means.
So proselytize and ossify. Okay. Wait a minute. There it is.
To ossify, to turn into bone. Or cease developing, be stagnant or rigid. There you go.
You got lucky this time.
So, I love being accused of being lucky. That's, I love it.
Better to be accused of being Don King.
Luckily landed on this word that happened to exist, right? So my point is, once that's infused within us, it becomes a kind of an inoculation against fuzzy thinking. And then as a voter, you vote for people who don't have fuzzy thinking because you don't have fuzzy thinking. And then the whole culture, you turn the country to your point.
Describe fuzzy thinking.
Fuzzy thinking. You don't recognize what is objectively true from what is not. And you just create your own truth in some trajectory that makes you feel good.
Well, that's never happened in American politics.
As you navigate. So people say, why don't you talk to the politicians? I say, no, they are duly elected by a population. Even Donald Trump. You don't hear me bad-mouthing Donald Trump. 60 million people voted for this guy. Right. So the issue is the 60 million fellow citizens of this country. And as an educator, I want to say, here's what science is and how and why it works and why it's powerful and how you can find grandma's house on your smartphone because it uses satellites that engineers figured out how to put in orbit. And what I want to do in the dead of night is go in and sneak and take away every part of your life that's been enabled by space investments. And that would include giving you back your shitty eyesight because you had LASIK surgery that was done cheaply and accurately, enabled by algorithms that were borrowed from the laser docking mechanism of the space shuttle and the space station. So I'll take this away.
I'm laughing because I picture living with you.
Just
hand me that almond milk. Oh, do you know what went into this? Sweetie, I got running late for work.
I know when to shut up.
I gotta work. I can't have another verbal tirade about almond milk. Please, I have to go. I mean it because I should. My wife has had an impacted assful of all me and my thoughts and my views and all of that. My proselytization. Neil, can we get personal for a second? I love you. I love this. I love the energy. I love it all. I want you and your ilk running everything. I want you and Elon Musk to get together and just go, hey, here's what we got. Hey, I'm going to walk in Monday morning, 9 a.m. and go, L.A. traffic, go.
Solved.
Go. I'm going to the Habit. What do you want? Do you like vanilla shake or should I surprise you this time? So that's all I want. And then you render it. And then I go, all right, here it is, people. Let's get building. That's what the smart guy said to do.
Right.
Not the mayor crying over the homeless situation. Now,
then you have people saying you're smart and I don't like you because you're smart. That's a whole other thing. Now, some of that is the smart people cop an attitude, and I get that. But that doesn't mean they're wrong about what it is they might be suggesting that could improve everybody's life.
Do you? So, I don't know what your status is. Married, kids, divorced, whatever. Do you have a status?
Married with children.
Married with children.
Yes.
All right, so
two kids, two juniors, one in college, one in high school.
Now, the beauty, I hope, is that I feel like my kids, 10-year-old twins, are living with the modern-day Will Rogers, and all they want to do is tell that guy to move over because he's blocking the TV set, and they're trying to watch Rumpus Rompers, or whatever the hell they're polluting their brain with.
Your kids are how old?
They're 10, they're twins, they've already had an assful of me.
Okay.
Now, you...
Yeah.
I would imagine you get ignored at home as well, or your
Yes. However, first, my wife has a PhD in mathematical physics, and we met in graduate school.
Oh, she blow hard too.
Our kids. I'm more insufferable than but our kids. I can tell you this: when they were like 14, 13, I certified them scientifically literate. They
oh, really?
Yeah. Whether or not
can you come over and do my kids? Just hit them with that label or your stamp.
Stamp. Because I said, okay, I'm done with them.
They're both horrible students.
I don't care what grades they get, but I know they will never be exploited evermore by someone who presumes that you do not know how this world works, and they do, and they exploit you for that ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So as early as age 13, if they hear adults talking and someone makes a claim that's not justified, they will politely say, well, why do you think that? What? Why do you have such confidence in that? Just why? And they'll say, oh, because I feel so. Well, have you considered this other? So it's, by the way, it is equally as intellectually lazy to believe everything you're told as it is to doubt everything you're told.
Mm-hmm.
The real pathway to enlightenment and to discovery is to probe with questions that get you closer to what the truth is. And so they learn how to ask questions, because that's what science literacy primarily is. It's not what is an internal combustion engine or DNA or the Big Bang. That's an aspect of it, because that's direct knowledge about what's driving this world. But it's the curiosity and what feeds it, and how you can use that curiosity to learn something new and to know when somebody else is full of shit.
Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, by the way, is the name of the book. I highly recommend it. It's available on Amazon. I'm going to tease a question out for you, and I'll do a quick spot. But first, I'll just ask. So you started off by sort of talking about how you go through life, and I think it's very true, and I've always said this. It's that kind of thing where it's like, I love lasagna, and if you tell me you don't care for lasagna, it doesn't make sense to me, and I kind of don't believe you. Because I love lasagna so much that there's either something wrong with you or you're lying to me if you just tell me I've tried it, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And we all go through life that way, and I realize I got a 110-pound Labrador that looks at me like I'm him, and that I would enjoy kibble and licking my own ball.
Right.
One out of two, not too bad.
And you haven't tried kibble.
He's working on the other.
What I'm saying is there's no way that dog or that goldfish or any other culture, whatever, doesn't look at us like we look at them, like I look at who doesn't like lasagna in my feelings. So you started off by saying you go through life, and in a way, it's a burden because you know this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not a superiority complex. It's just you know this, and yet you have to watch what is around you. It's like you're a dietitian, and you have to watch people eat junk food all day long. And so there's one part where you go, well, that would be pretty depressing. That's pretty depressing. And we started off, and it sounded a little depressing, but you're loquacious. Look that up, Gary. You're gregarious.
It's legit.
It's a Don King
word. Totally legit word.
You're all of these things with all this positive energy.
You're loquacious? You're bodacious?
So how... which is the real you? Don't answer. Do you toggle back and forth? How do you keep this crazy positive energy up in the face of all the knowledge that you know in the greenhouse? Don't answer. I'll tell you first about Rich Uncles, and then we'll answer it. All right. So I'm a big fan of Rich Uncles. RichUncles.com. I invested in these guys. They're REITs. They're real estate investment trusts, getting cash dividends as we speak. Lots of our listeners have too. Here's how Rich Uncles, they're smart, man. They're checking into student housing. They're looking for checking in proposed REITs, real estate investment trust. So here's how it works. Parents pay for the student housing, right? Rich Uncles gets the student housing facilities at major colleges and universities, and then they get a nice return on their investment. Sound good? Go to richuncles.com if you're interested in their student housing REIT. That's a Reg A Tier 2 offering, that is. Rich Uncles. Tell me you heard it here. You go to richuncles.com, or you give them a call in the blower. 855-RICH-UNCLES. That is 855-RICH-UNCLES.
Rich Uncles Student Housing REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent in response will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $15,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.
So, there's your long-winded question, Neil. You start off a little morose, and you seem very gregarious now, but how...
is that a word, gregarious?
How does it work?
So, I think... what may be different, at least for me and others with my background, is I'm also an educator. So if there's something I know that you don't know, no, I don't feel like superior. No, I'm saying maybe they would also like to know what I know. And I do some curating of what's more interesting than what. And that's precisely what this book is. Astrophysics for People in a Hurry is a relatively short book, very small format, but it's a handpicked selection of things that are just kind of mind-blowing that I've judged that you would appreciate knowing. And so when you don't know something that I do, my urge is to teach it.
How I
enthusiasm. As Carl Sagan said, when you're in love, you want to tell the world. And me and the universe go way back. And I, you know, if you ask me, I will talk your ear off about the universe.
But how does it affect you on a personal level?
Oh, just outlook. I mean, every day it's like, oh, what might I learn today? I mean, think of the people who run down the steps after high school and graduation day, toss their notes into the air and say, school's out.
Yeah.
I no longer have to learn.
Yeah.
When in fact, your only job had been to learn.
Think about those people.
Okay. And so if that was you, then you're now spending more time alive, not in school, than you spent in school. And are you really done learning? Because I think there is an ember that still is lit within us that under the right conditions, you can fan it and have it ignite into a flame. And if that's the case, then you can turn a sleepy country into an innovation nation where everybody's just curious.
Well, curious. I've always said that. And it drives me insane. And I think as we talk about it, it's interesting. So the problem, if you talk to a nutritionist, you know, turns out fat is pretty good and pretty necessary, but they'll tell you the problem with fat's got the word fat in it. And I sort of feel that way when I talk to people about natural gas sometimes. It's got the word gas in it, and so people don't like it, even though it seems to be an upgrade to what's coming out, the fossil fuels coming out of the ground, the oil coming out of the ground. But
by the way, they could equally as well call it natural oil.
They should call it. Ooh. Get a publicist, Exxon.
By the same token, you know.
Yeah.
Salt, all right, that's mined from it. Okay. Where do you think that salt came from? It's from a sea that has millions of years ago evaporated, leaving behind a salt deposit that we then dig out of the ground. So all table salt is sea salt.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So
it's just a matter of how old the sea is from which it came.
So the problem with learning, when you get pushed through like I did, LA Unified, by the time you get done with that experience, it has such a negative connotation.
That's why I'm not blaming the person who threw up their notes. Something happened in the school system where we think learning is a chore.
Right.
And it's not your fault if you feel that way. Think of how we use the word lecture. In a college, lecture is okay. You paid for the tuition, you go attend the lecture. But outside of that environment,
Why are you lecturing to me
is a bad word. Stop lecturing. So the whole idea that you could be learning has had a bad rap.
Well, anytime there's something you're supposed to do, you don't want to do, it feels like homework.
Yeah. And I'm saying, well, homework, I get to learn something. Mm. Go to an engineer. Think about this in a workplace, and you can imagine this even if you've never seen it. You know there are people in a workplace where the boss will hand them some task, and the person will look at it and say, you know, I'm not trained to do this. This is not in my job description.
Right.
That's not an engineer saying that.
Right.
You give a problem to an engineer they've never seen before. The engineer says, whoa, I've never seen this before. Let me figure out how to solve it.
Right.
And they'll attack it like it's meat in front of a tiger. And that is the deep curiosity within where that day they're going to learn something new that they didn't learn before. And so I hold as one of my goals that every day I try to make sure someone else's life is made a little easier because I exist in this world. And I learned something today that I did not know tomorrow. And that drives my enthusiasm for living.
Well, I've had the discussion with my wife a million times because we have the 10-year-old twins, and if you grow up out here or anywhere now, I guess you get caught up in this vortex of, you know, they need pre-kindergarten and pre-pre-kindergarten, and you got to pump classical music into your uterus, and you got to put a speaker up there and all this stuff. And all I ever said is they're either going to be curious or they're not going to be curious. And if they're curious, nothing will stop them. And if they're not, God help them.
Yeah. Thank you. That's, you just summarized the last half hour of words that came out of my mouth.
Oh,
well, look at me. I'm the Reader's Digest version of Neil deGrasse Tyson.
10-year-old twins don't mess that up. That is the peak.
What do we do to make kids curious?
They're already curious. This is my point. They I was walking through the park. It had just rained. There was a mud puddle, and there was a woman walking with her daughter, and they're approaching the mud puddle, and the daughter is looking at the mud puddle, and you know what the kid wants to do with the mud puddle. They want to jump with 2 feet into the mud puddle.
Right.
And I'm thinking, let her do it. Let her do it. Let her do it. And what did the mother do? Guides her around, pulls her arm, and I said, you have just thwarted an experiment in cratering that could – that could be the insights in that child as an adult will learn how to deflect asteroids or something. Whatever. My point is that could have been a completely – what is viewed as you're going to get things dirty. Mm-hmm. Yes, prevent the child from playing on the cliff ledge, okay? Right. Because they might die. But jumping into a puddle, you didn't have kids so that you can maintain a clean household, an orderly household. Right. No, you knew what you were getting into.
Yep.
If there's an egg on the counter and your kid reaches up for the egg, you say, don't touch that, it might break. Let him play with the egg and discover that it breaks. That's interesting. You can have something that's hard yet fragile.
Right.
That's a property that's not common in our lives. And so then they'll play. Then they find out there's yolk inside. Oh, what is that? And then you tell them that might have been a chicken. Oh, my gosh. And what did this cost? 18 cents or whatever an egg costs today.
Yep.
That is 18 cents worth of education. As the president of Harvard once said, if you think the cost of education is high, try the cost of ignorance.
Wow.
Put that on a license plate frame. Mount that on your Prius and smoke it. I love that. And so what do we need to do for – so all – you know, we can talk about prison population. We can talk about people that are addicted to drugs or pain pills. We can talk about unemployment. We can talk about underemployment. We can talk about everything, violence, domestic violence. But it's like it's kind of like all roads lead to education. You can take all these problems separately, or you can get to the hub, which is sort of education and families and parents and interest and curiosity and nurturing and all that.
I couldn't agree more.
And all these other societal ills will sort of go away. You're not going to have – you'll have a large drop in domestic violence if you have a bunch of curious, educated, respectful human beings and the prison population and everything else we don't like.
Adam, you don't need me on this show. You just said everything. What? You just, again, you some readers. Adam, the Reader's Digest.
Yes.
I have nothing more to add to this conversation after what just came out of your mouth.
Well, here's the tough part. How do we start deploying that, and what do we do?
So I have a couple ideas, but they're still in the oven, so that makes them half baked. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I gotcha.
So I will formulate these. Maybe one day I'll write a book on it, but I'll share some of it with you. Consider the following. Who is considered the best student in the class?
Asian.
It's no,
then they're parts Eastern Indian. Well, yeah. It's not a spelling bee.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Well, so they win all the spelling bees, right?
All right. Anyway, right, then Asian. White.
Western
anyway,
European?
I'm not sure where you're going here. Right. Yeah, I don't like this.
I get you. So just consider who's the best. It's the student who obeys the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
The student who's
under the current system.
Yes, the student who's the cut up is disruptive in class.
Thank
the
you.
Student who that has a me. Personality that's spilling over the rule book.
The class clown versus the teacher's pet.
The class clown versus, and what is the teacher's pet? Gets all their assignments done on time, gets high grades on the test, and everyone points to that person as the person who will go far.
Not only that, yes and. In my day, that person was called smart. And the other person, me, was called dumb
now,
because we only had one yardstick to measure this by.
A binary yardstick. And
right.
So what happens is, go look around society at who are the shakers and movers of everything that we care about. Musicians, comedians, actors, journalists, people who shape the culture in which we live, the entrepreneurs, and ask them, were you the best student in the class? The answer for nearly all of them is going to be simply no. And many of them were college dropouts, including Bill Gates and you know, the founder of Facebook and
Zuckerberg
and Michael Dell. And these are people who were driven by a level of curiosity.
Jimmy Kimmel.
That would otherwise be constrained by the rules we put in place to judge whether you're a good student or not. So somewhere in there, we need a metric, a yardstick that says you have this energy for life. Let us find a way to nurture that and turn that into something and find a way to apply that energy so that you can transform some aspect of tomorrow's culture rather than shut up and sit down and stay in the corner and only give me a high grade.
Neil.
Not only that.
Yes.
One more thing. Not only that. I've taken a show of hands. I've been in front of large audiences and I say, how many, we've never met before, have we? Okay. How many people have had transformative teachers in their lives? Everyone will agree they've had at least one. I say, how many have had as many as five of those? Two people raise their hand out of 1,000. Four, maybe 30 people. Three, 50 people. Two, couple hundred people. So wait a minute. We've had dozens, if not scores, of teachers in our lives, and only two or three were singularly impactful on us?
Brian has stood there while I've screamed when we do this thing where it's like, hey, teachers are heroes. I'm like, yeah, Mr. Backus from fifth grade a douche, and the rest of them I've had have been horrible.
Thank you.
So please, let's stop this. All cops are heroes, or all police, or all teachers are heroes.
Let's just get
everyone's
real.
A hero. It drives me fucking nuts.
Let's get real. So we all, I have found statistically, have no more than what would fit in the digits of your hand among teachers who are singularly influential in your life.
That's a very interesting study that you did of show of hands, because it's so true. We start beating the drum of, oh, we've all had this great, positive, whatever, but it's true. You say two good teachers, and everyone's hands drop down to their lap.
Exactly. And so what I'm saying is, the first candidate for the cloning machine should be those teachers.
Yeah, those
right.
Okay. They're exceptional teachers.
So when I speak to teachers who are up and coming, they're in school and at ed schools, I say, be the teacher that is that one or two or three teachers that rise up above all others in your life. And these are teachers that manage to get you interested in something that you didn't care about walking into the class in the first place. But they somehow made it so interesting that you wanted to learn more and you couldn't wait to get to class the next day. And even if you didn't get an A, you could have gotten a B, maybe even a C. You still, at the end of that class, said, this is the best class I ever had in my life. That's the teachers who need to be duplicated in the cloning machine, and those are the teachers you should want to become if you are in school trying to become a teacher yourself.
Let me pile on and possibly blow your mind as well.
I want everyone's mind should be blown at least once a week, if not once a day.
Let's get back to this cloning machine.
I concur.
I'm not authorized to give further.
And let's combine being blown and the cloning machine and see if we can really get something done. They haven't got any Marilyn Monroe DNA.
Donut Shop Universe.
No, when you're talking about the kids, and you're so right, I was literally class clown at North Hollywood High in 1982. And
go find out what the straight A student is today. Just dig that up.
I'm sure I employ more people than they do. Okay, I'm sure of
it. You're a household name, and the rest are not.
I'm sure of it, but I was told I was disruptive and to shut up and whatever it is.
Right.
And when you're talking about the kids and the energy, and all you need is energy, the craziest thing in the world. You get around Neil deGrasse Tyson, and now you guys may be worlds apart, but I'll tell you who you remind me of. Attorney Mark Geragos, because he comes in here with the same energy, his boundless curiosity, energy.
Did you just compare me with a lawyer?
He's chose to use his for evil.
Yeah, he uses power for evil.
But even Darth Vader, you have to admit, had special powers.
You got to admire Darth Vader. Yes, right. Yes,
so I'm saying, you guys, I know you both fairly well, and you remind me of each other in terms of just bringing the energy.
Okay.
And he's very curious. You're very curious as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now, that was a big insult. So his thing, my thing is this. I once saw a study, and I was watching it. It wasn't a study. I didn't read. I was watching TV, and they were talking about
TMZ.
They were watching.
Hold on.
I saw the study on TMZ.
Yeah.
Neil was in a spit take.
Yeah, I know. You almost gave me the.
I know. You're about choked on the
water. You want to know the saddest testimony about my life?
Here we go.
TMZ runs like a 2-hour Saturday special, which is nothing but all the stories from the week. cherry picking.
Yeah.
Every time I watch, I go, seen it. Yeah, I've seen it. Brad Pitt's got a new girlfriend. I've seen that one. And I realize I've seen everything.
I've actually been on TMZ about five times.
I know.
The thing is, you know, they're at the airport and I'm coming in and say, Dr. Tyson, can we? And I want to say, no. What kind of, but I realize they can only really talk to me about science.
Right.
So this is an occasion to put science on TMZ.
Right.
So I've seen
you at LAX.
Yes, that's what it was. I say yes to that because that's an infusion of a little bit of a science pill for people who that might otherwise think or care about.
Well, when I wasn't watching TMZ, I saw a show and they said it was a whole thing about dogs. I've told the story on the show, but I've not told you. And it's getting back to your student and your enthusiasm thing. When they pick out the dogs that sniff out the cocaine or the gunpowder or whatever they're looking for, the backyard vegetables that aren't supposed to be transported across the state line, whatever those dogs are, I've always been curious because I've seen all different breeds when I go to the airport or I go whatever. And I always thought, well, there'd be one dog that's a whatever hound that's got a better nose for this. And I've realized, oh, no, it's all different dogs that they use to sniff all the contraband out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, so they're talking to the guy who picks the dogs. And he said, what's the criteria for these dogs? They're all different breeds. And he said, the ones with the most enthusiasm. We go to the pound, and when we walk through the kennel there, and you see the dog that's napping or laying around, and versus the one that's jumping up and down and sniffing and wagging the tail and jumping up and down, we pick that dog. Ooh. Because we could train any of these dogs.
Dogs with energy for life.
Dogs with energy for life.
For living,
we train that dog, and that's why they're all different breeds. It's just the one that's the most excited and has the most enthusiasm. And I'm thinking of these students now, but instead of picking those students are picking those dogs, understanding they have the most energy, we're yelling at them, Gaiete, Siete.
Yeah, Gaiete, Siete. And here's one question I have that's not yet been satisfactorily answered for me. If you have dog lovers out there, maybe they can answer this. Okay, may I share this?
Sure.
Okay. If dogs have such an acute sense of smell, they can smell things at great distances. Bloodhounds can trace you down miles away if you're escaping. Then why must they come within a quarter of an inch to smell each other's butt?
I
cannot figure this out.
It seems
to me the butt smell is there
without
having to put their nose right up under the tail.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And here's all I can think of.
What?
In the great movie Defending Your Life by Albert Brooks.
Okay. I know that movie. Yes.
It was a very interesting take on what heaven is.
Yes.
And
I'd forgotten that was the name of it.
It's
was
the
great.
Kind of thing you'd like to share with your kids in terms of live a courageous life and you'll move on. That's how you're judged. Mm-hmm. At some point.
It had Meryl Streep in it, too.
Yeah. At some point, Rip Taylor was eating.
Rip Torn.
A little different. Rip Torn was eating some mush.
Yeah.
And he was telling Albert Brooks.
This is damn exciting.
Albert's
stuff.
Like, what are you eating? This is like a gray mush. And he said, I use 60% of my brain. You wouldn't enjoy it. And he said, well, let me try it. And he said, I'm telling you, you're not going to like it. I like it. I use 60% of my brain. He's using 50.
Your
using,
brains would
you're
like
using
it.
8% of your brain. That is an interesting concept. And he said, give it to me. And he tasted it. And of course, Albert Brooks spit it out. Well, this is the worst taste. And he said, I told you, you wouldn't like it. Maybe to a dog, but that acute sense of smell, it smells like funnel cake when they get that close. You know what I mean? It kind of looks like funnel cake.
Okay.
Think about
it. They love it so much they want even more of it.
It's something different than our brains. You see, our brains, we just think it smells like poop from 10 feet away. Wait till you get 2 inches away. For them, maybe it's like...
Okay, that's good. I
Rip eating the mush.
That's a really good hypothesis. That's got to have some truth in that. Another, in your Albert Brooks movie, it's interesting you remember that scene, because there's a different scene that I remember that was similar, where Rip Torn is having a conversation, I think it was him, and Albert Brooks kind of eavesdrops on it, and he says, oh, what are you guys talking about? And he says, oh, you would never understand. You don't use enough of your brain. He said, no, just try me. I'm sure, just try. And you, the viewer, are thinking, yeah, try me on this. I can try to do this. And then he utters a sentence that it is hopeless that you can understand.
He said something like, I was caught in the outer rim of thought, or something like that.
Something like deep, but you can't even have access to it. And he says, you're right, I don't understand it. And so it occurred to me, after seeing that scene, there are surely conversations intelligent aliens will have and can have that are completely beyond the reach of the deepest, smartest humans who have ever been born.
I look forward to that, I think, unless they're my overlords and I've been enslaved by them.
Well, they already are, and Earth is their zoo, and we don't even know it.
Oh, yeah. My mind is blown. It's not to serve man. It's how to serve man on a skillet. Neil deGrasse Tyson. I know Neil's got a heart out, so I'm going to let him get mobile.
Can I leave you with one last cosmic perspective?
Absolutely.
But only if we can get that applause again when I'm done with this.
Absolutely.
There's three people left.
A lot of people filed out.
So, again, the cosmic perspective is about how to grasp the large and the small to put your life in some kind of context. And just so you know, I'm drinking a glass of water here, and molecules are very small. There are more molecules of water in this glass of water than there are glasses of water in all the world's oceans.
Wow.
So that means that there's enough molecules in here to scatter into every other glass of water that is drawn from the world's water supply. So if I drink this and it comes back out of my body any one of a half dozen ways, that water returns to the water supply, mixes, so that given enough time, the water that you draw from the faucet has guaranteed to have molecules in it, water molecules that pass through the kidneys of Genghis Khan or Billy the Kid or Joan of Arc.
Wow.
And so we have a connectivity not only with one another genetically but through time. Yes, not only genetically, but we are sharing molecules that have passed through our human physiology. And the same is true with every breath you take. The nitrogen molecules that you breathe in, there are more of those per breath than there are breaths of air in the entire world. So that molecules that you pass through your lungs have passed through the lungs of name any great person, Abe Lincoln, Socrates.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Maybe not quite yet because you're contemporaries of one another.
And is Rick Taylor still alive?
The air has to mix. So we have a connectivity with others throughout the world.
Then the next time a stranger is punching me by the side of the freeway, I'm going to repeat that soliloquy.
We're connected, dude!
Verbatim. Yeah. Word for word. The book, I love all of it. Neil, let's have you in as much as humanly possible. Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. It's available right now on Amazon, and it's just can we get some more Neil deGrasse Tysons in the world?
Well, thank you for that support.
Please?
I'm just trying to keep the universe real.
Can we please do it? All right, Neil, I'll let you run to your next appointment,
dude,
because I'm being told.
Yeah. I think I'm doing Chelsea Handler next.
All right.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, on the show.
Yeah,
gotcha. Because I was going to say film it. You want to blow up the internet, you do Chelsea Handler. We will blow up that goddamn internet.
Yeah, TMZ.
All right, say hi to Chelsea for me. God bless you. I love you. All right, Brian, we'll do a little post-mortem here. First, I'll tell you about Simply Safe. Simply Safe. Don't throw away that water. Good to see you, man. I really appreciate it. Love that. All right. Simply Safe. You don't have to be an astrophysicist to be smart enough to realize you need some Simply Safe entry sensors, motion sensors, glass breaking sensors. Make your home a burglar's worst nightmare in under an hour. Pre-programmed to work right out of the box. Just plug in the base station. It'll talk you through the whole process. They should use Neil's voice.
That really would be helpful.
I could use them in my nav devices as well.
Very calming influence.
Yes. And then at the end of every nav thing, he'd go, well, now you've found Alvera Street. Tomorrow, the universe.
Not calming, inspiring.
Inspiring, yeah. The entire system is wireless, and no need to drill holes, no long-term lock-in contracts. It's just month-to-month. No hidden fees, just $14.99 a month, 24/7 professional monitoring. Emergency dispatch services. Let's not wait another day. Go to simplysafeadam.com. Get your 10% off home security system. Simplysafeadam.com. Get 10% off. All right. Let's see. Where the heck were we? Wow, man. It's funny with Neil. Like, I go, oh, Neil's coming in. Okay, that should be good. And then we think, all right, well, let's play some Rotten Tomatoes game with him or something. We'll talk about the book for 10 minutes, and then you talk to him for an hour. You blink your eyes.
Lost in conversation. And there was there would have been more to talk about. If you could hang out for another hour, we could do another episode.
It's the part I'm again, it's such a disappointment to me that people aren't more invested is too good a word. It's just interested in their own development. Mm-hmm. Like that it's just not a thing for most people. They have a thing. Their thing may be the Dodgers. They may have a soccer team they follow. Maybe it's their kids. Maybe it's their pet. Maybe it's all these things. But it's a car. It's not them.
Yeah.
And their development. As a matter of fact, when it comes to the Dodgers, it's nonstop about they need a good middle relief pitcher. They need a straight. There's all sorts of strategies. And then you talk to them about them and they want to have
strategies.
Zero, not only zero strategies, but most conversations I have with people about them or us or improvements are met with go F yourself, which is a bizarre posture.
Yeah.
It's a weird posture to be in, is it not?
Because if you focus that energy on yourself, all those other things, it's the high tide buoys all ships or whatever, you know. Whatever
raises all ships, yes.
All the other things in your life are going to be that much better.
I find it sort of, my overall condition about it is just sad.
Yeah.
I think about friends that I've had since high school where I have said to them, I have unlocked a couple mysteries in terms of what's standing between me and success, and I'd like to share that with you, and it's been met with, not indifference, anger, which is an interesting...
Yeah, that's an interesting tact.
I often kind of look around for what I think I could call the ultimate stupid, and this is my new... This is kind of my new, and I have two definitions of smart and stupid. It has nothing to do with math scores, conveniently, because I would not be above the
self-serving
50 percentile for sure. But here's the thing: smart is can you achieve what you'd like to achieve? I don't want to attach a monetary number to it or a number of cars or houses you own or something. But look, if you want to work with pets, can you work with, if you want to be a doctor, can you be a doctor? If you want to travel Europe for a year, backpacking, can you do this? Can you achieve? Can you do what you want to do? Can you achieve that goal? If you can, and it's more than watch TV, I will label you a relatively smart person. You were able to go figure out whatever it is you wanted and go do it. And dumb is now the rejection of knowledge, not how much you personally know or what you do on the SATs, just when somebody with a good idea lays that good idea that you somehow look at it as an attack or personal.
Right. I think what you're saying, what Neil was leading toward, which is there's more than one kind of smart, like the math genius who, you know, is clearly a smart guy, but if he can't figure out his how to fill out a resume or an application, you know, it's what good is that smarts doing you? You know, there's different kinds of smarts.
Yeah,
whatever gets you to that goal, whatever that goal is,
if you
that's
can
using your smarts,
you
maybe it's being a math genius, maybe it's, you know, knowing how to talk to people.
Yeah, internalize as much as you can with everything. I had this weird stupid thing that I did yesterday, but I also realized I don't think I would have done this 10 years ago. And believe you me, I'm no hero, but I did this yesterday, but no, this isn't anything, but I still don't think I would have done this 3 years ago. I was, I'm trying to get this floor situation done in my house, as you know. And it's met with some trials and some tribulations.
Is it terrazzo?
Yes, it's hit some stalls. The wrong stuff has been shipped once again. Now it's another month before the rest of the trim tile can be shipped. It's as I said, it had an energy. It's a bad energy, and it's never disappointed in the disappointment department. And I said to my guy, Rob, last night, I said, it's his uncle that's doing the job, as previously discussed. I said to him when I was walking to Starbucks with Sonny, I call him like 8 at night, and I said, I just need the schedule. I need to know when he's coming. I need to know who's coming with him. I need to work this out. Is he working weekends? Are we going to get this stuff? Is stuff going to get shipped? Send me an email that just tells me what the breakdown is so I can figure out the week. I don't want him to come to the house and no one's around to let him in, whatever. Please send me that email, 8 o'clock at night. Get up the next morning. I'm a little bit stressed out. I got to do a podcast and I got to go film a TV show and I'm kind of running. And I get up and I go through my emails and I don't see the email with the schedule. Now, I got a house that's half tiled and all the furniture's in my office and the rest of the furniture, the kids are climbing over in the other room.
It'd make life a little easier.
It's a little chaotic. And as I'm leaving, I'm going to write a book called Always Time for a Rant. And I'm literally running late. I've got to do a podcast. I got to use you, but I run into Olga in the kitchen because the kids are sick and she's there early and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, no email where any of this, you know, because she may have done the Niagara Falls move. My Niagara Falls. It's an old bit. Vaudevillian. She probably said, like, oh, what's going on with the tile or something. I go, what's going on with the tile? I don't know what's going on with the tile. No, I don't know what's going on. Because I asked for an email last night, and I got up this morning, and there was no email. And I said, why don't people get it? When I tell somebody, here's what I need, I'm going to get up next morning, I'm going to look for that thing. And if it's not there, I'm going to have a lot of feelings about it. Why don't you know what I need? Why don't you listen to me? What's wrong with everybody? Blah, 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 blah. And then I stormed out of the house to go do comedy.
And to make mirth for all the listeners.
For all the people. And I called Rob and I said, Rob, where's that goddamn email? I told you last night, I need an email. My house torn apart. I need to schedule, blah, blah, blah. And Rob said, I sent the email. I told my uncle to send it. And I'm pretty sure he sent it last night. And then I realized I'm a bad reader and I've never gotten an email from this cat. Maybe it's under some weird name that I just scanned through and maybe it's there. And I went and looked. And it was there. And I thought, okay. And I told Rob, gotcha. Thanks. No problem. But I didn't tee off on Rob. He just said, hey, it's in there. Mm. And I looked at it. And then I went, did the podcast. And then I went, did the TV show. And then I got home last night at like 8:30 and Olga was in the kitchen. And I realized the only person I yacked at about this was Olga. Mm-hmm. And Olga doesn't really care about Uncle Rob and Uncle Rob doesn't care about Olga. But I was talking smack about somebody who did their job. And I just told Olga, I said, remember this morning I was screaming about the emails?
You had to reset it to zero.
I had to reset to zero.
I know that feeling.
And I was yelling about, and by the way, no one's going to call me on anything. It's because it's not like Uncle Rob and Olga are going to be out having beers Saturday. And Olga's going to go, well, I hope you cleared up that dust up. What are you talking about? Well, I sent that email. What? He said what? Mm-hmm. There's no universe where that could happen. But it was still in my head.
Yep.
And I said to Olga, look, remember that thing I was talking about this morning, Rob? And she was like trying to figure it out. Like, what? You're complaining all the time. I never know which one.
One runs into the next.
And I said, well, listen, I was wrong. Mm. He sent the email. It was not his fault. Mm-hmm. I made it as if it was his fault. But then I went and checked. And the email was there. So this was me being wrong. And I should have checked closer next time. So whatever I said that was negative, cleanse disregard. It from your mind
she
because
said,
that was me, not this was my fault.
Yeah.
And she said, like, who cares? Or why are we getting into this again? But it was important to me to do that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And again, it's just a good habit to get into. Now,
it's a spiritual, like almost like a, you know, a ledger. You know, you're like, you want to, if you push the energy bad that way, you're like, now I'm wrong. I got to pull it back. But it doesn't make sense logically, but I know what you mean.
I must say, it was humbling, and I didn't really want to do it because I'd just done this thing about why don't people know why I'm right all the time and do what I tell them to do, basically. And this was a second follow-up conversation about how wrong I was. So it was kind of a weird thing to do, and especially
to Olga.
To Olga. And then later to Phil when I'd been drinking.
Sure.
But
he's just shaking his
I
head.
Felt the need to do it. And I didn't have, although I like the cosmic ledger, I didn't have the cosmic ledger feeling. I just had this is something I said, this was wrong, and I can easily get out of this. Nobody's ever going to call me out on this, but I don't want to do that.
It's on you. It weighs on you.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And go ahead. And so here's what I'm saying. The more that you do, the easier it is. And the less feelings you have about it.
Right.
So the next time.
It's a habit to get into.
Yeah. The next time somebody says, hey, you were late, you don't have to go, you were late. You just get to go, oh, sorry.
Yeah, I messed up. Sorry.
It won't feel like anything. If you can get to that, mm-hmm. then you can learn everything. All right. You want to really learn something, you go to LegalZoom. Mm-hmm. Five things to expect from LegalZoom for your business. One, reliability. More than a million people trusted LegalZoom to help start their business, corporate, LLCs, nonprofits, DBAs, and more. Experience helping business owners for 15 years. And I've been saying that for a while, so it's got to be over 15 years. Helpful support, customer service pros based in the U.S. Legal advice, of course. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, but they built a network of independent attorneys to review contracts, help navigate employment law, and more. And no surprises. Upfront pricing, customer reviews, and satisfaction guarantee. Complete transparency. Gargis will tell you, use LegalZoom. don't come to Gargis. He's a gouger, man. That hourly. No. If you can get it at LegalZoom.
Neil deGrasse Tyson seemed pleased when he compared him to a lawyer.
He hated it. I'll tell you, they both have the same energy.
There's a guy who works in Washington.
I'm going through the cosmic kennel of life, man, and I'm picking Gargis and Neil deGrasse Tyson. It is LegalZoom. Dawson.
See how LegalZoom can help you start and run your business at LegalZoom.com now, and be sure to enter Adam at checkout for special savings. LegalZoom.com.
All right, and last but not least, Geico, everybody. You want to save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? Good. You go to geico.com. 15 minutes. Could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's not waste. You know how we don't like waste. I don't care how much money you have. You want to save it. It's a precious commodity. Go to geico.com. Spend about 15 minutes. Go check it out. And you could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. Why wouldn't you do that, man? Let's be smart. Let's be Neil smart. Let's go to Geico. Geico.com. All right. Let's see. Us doing a live show, Irvine Improv, Thursday, June 15th. Come on out. They always sell out. Always a fun time. Oxnard, Levity Live, Thursday, July 6th. Come on out and say hi. See how the fudge is packed. The 24-Hour War, available on Amazon Prime for free. Check it out. Leave a rating. Leave a review. I love reading those. You can get it at Chassis, too. Go to Chassis, Chassy. No Safe Spaces, me and Dennis Prager, another great mind, getting together. And you can check that out. Amazon and iTunes and AdamCarolla.com. And the Corolla Bar Crawl. See Lynette, see Ray, see the flunkies over there, or the lackeys over there. June 24th, tickets at CorollaDrinks.com. Go say hi. They love it. All right. And last but not least, let's not forget the Books. Go to Adam and text Adam to 64600. Get the message, get the deal, and do it all with the Books. Make mama happy. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Neil deGrasse Tyson. And Bald Brian and Gina Gratz say, mahalo. Record this. You're 1,000% correct.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace at Adam Carolla. Want to leave us a voicemail? The phone number is 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take a Knee for a dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at AdamCarolla.com. Gina Grad is on the radio. Weekday mornings, 5 to 8 a.m. at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. For tickets and info on all the live podcasts, man, great events, books, movies, and more, go to AdamCarolla.com.